Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome back to Roadcase, everybody. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg. I am so psyched to be back in the Roadcase studio for this episode 224 featuring Anna Ayers, the general manager at Brooklyn Bowl Williamsburg. As you may note, my voice is not generally what it is. I am just back from My Morning Jacket's one big holiday vacation residency at the Hard Rock Hotel in the Riviera Maya, just south of Cancun, and just socializing for 4 days straight, constantly talking, not during shows, but socializing with friends, catching up with people, just shredded my voice. I'm doing the best I can here. So pardon that, but it's also just a general level of fun exhaustion for a good reason. So happy to be back and really psyched for this episode. If you're here for the first time on Roadcase, welcome. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. Really psyched to have you. And as I like to do on every episode, I want to remind all of you that you can get involved with Roadcase in a number of different ways. You can follow us on the socials. We're at Roadcase Pod. On those socials, you can send us an email if you'd like to be in touch to info@roadcasepod.com. You can also visit our website on roadcasepod.com. Great way to show your support for Roadcase, and just for a heads up on when new episodes come into the world, you can follow us on your favorite listening platform. If you're on Spotify, there's a follow box there. Just click on that. And on Apple Podcasts, there's a check mark up in the upper right-hand corner. Really easy to do. You can also rate and review Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. That's an awesome thing to do. Also, really helps out the show. So if you're on Spotify right now, you can just go to that Roadcase homepage that where you found this episode. And right next to that follow box, there's those three little dots. Click on that, and there's a place where you can click on a bunch of stars. On Apple Podcasts, go back to the Roadcase homepage, scroll up a little bit. There's a place with some stars and a place to write a review. Super easy to do and really helps out the show. So happy to have you along for this episode featuring Anna Ayers, general manager of Brooklyn Bowl Williamsburg. Really happy to have Anna on the show. I'm a big fan of the Brooklyn Bowls, and I've had Paul Batcher on, who's a talent buyer for Brooklyn Bowls. That was November 11th, 2022 episode. I also had the big cheese, Peter Shapiro, on the show. I spoke to him, and that episode is from August 5th of 2022, if you want to go and look those up. But got Anna here for the show. She is general manager of Brooklyn Bowl Williamsburg. She has been in performing arts her whole life, and she attended Sir Paul McCartney's Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts in Liverpool, England. She began her career at Brooklyn Bowl after a chance meeting with Peter Shapiro, and we'll learn about that. That was back in 2010, and she's worked her way up to her current general manager role after having worked as a host, bartender, floor captain, operations manager, and we'll learn a lot about that. March is International Women's Month, and Brooklyn Bowl is in their major operational roles, features all women, and I'm really psyched to have Anna on the show and speak from that perspective as well. But Brooklyn Bowl prides itself on just amazing and human-friendly experiences, incredible live music, insanely great food, and just overall incredible hospitality. And that's the vibe, and it's very intentional. I can attest to this at Brooklyn Bowls. And I just love going to venues in general where they are focused on the guest experience, light-handed security, great food, overall and general friendly vibe that is conducive to enjoying a show in the best way possible. And when you leave Brooklyn Bowls, you feel like you were really at one of those types of shows. There's several of those also in Chicago. But Brooklyn Bowls are, there's one in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, Las Vegas, Philadelphia, and the one that I've been to in Nashville. Can't say enough about that. And Anna has a really amazing background. She's an incredibly compelling human, and we just had a really great conversation. I know you're going to love this. Learned a lot about her background and her perspective on what Brooklyn Bowls is trying to accomplish, like I said, from that hospitality standpoint, talent standpoint, and all the fun things that are going on there behind the scenes. So really glad that you're here. Thanks for being along for this one. And I want to send a special thank you to Anna Ayers for being here on this episode of Roadcase. And here we go. Okay, Anna, thanks for being on Roadcase. So great to see your smiling face.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. It's been, it's really cool. I love Brooklyn Bowls. I'd had Pete Shapiro on, had Paul Badger on. Such a great venue concept. We're going to talk all about it. So where to start? The thing that sticks out to me, he went to Liverpool School of Performing Arts. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that happened. Yeah.
It's Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts. Wow. That's a standout item. I mean, was that you, so you grew up in Iowa, but you went to then high school and then you just like, I'm doing performing arts.
Yeah. So, you know, every high schooler at one point has to decide, you know, what am I going to do for my future? And where am I going to go? And for me, it was always performing arts, whether it was, you know, acting, music, dancing, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So my transition over there, it kind of just happened very quickly. I'm from Iowa, small town. So when you go to a performing arts college or, you know, music theater, legit acting, whatever you're doing, you do have to audition to get into these colleges. So being in a very tiny town, I had to go to some regional auditions to kind of get all the schools in one place. So I wasn't, you know, making trips to every state. Anyway, so when I was at this regional audition, LIPA, Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, was there. I started talking to this gentleman named Darren Murphy, who was really my advocate getting into that college. And he's like, you should just come in. Just come in and do a quick audition.
Yeah.
So I did, and I performed two pieces, and they offered me a spot. And I had a trip planned to do an audition for NYU. I still did that, but it immediately after they accepted me, I was like, I'm going to go there. So that's kind of the course of what happened. So that summer I moved. My mom took a trip with me and just moved to Liverpool.
The Iowa girl in the UK. Had you traveled abroad before
that point? I had never been to England before. No.
Wow. That's a big leap of faith. Did you go visit before you agreed to go, or was it just kind of like, it's good enough for me? It was good enough for Paul McCartney to put his name on it.
For sure. So how you can't beat that.
I didn't go deep into the research on that, on that LIPA. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Dua Lipa, but, LIPA. We're having vowels problems this morning. What's Paul McCartney's involvement in it?
So the actual, obviously. Yeah. The actual location was him and John's old boys' school. So there, it's an interesting setup. I haven't been there for years, obviously, after graduating, but there's a portion of it that's the pre-existing building, which is very, very old. And then they built onto it when they opened this college up.
Right.
So it's very cool. And he goes to every single, I don't know if he still does, but back then he would be at every graduation, you know, you shake his hand, you walk across the stage.
And that didn't happen for you?
I actually didn't go to the graduation because I was here in New York.
Too good for you, huh?
No, not that at all. Not at all. It was just timing. I ended up having to come here to do an audition to get the casting agency here. So I missed out on that little portion. But you know, he did come to the school for other things as well. So
So you've met him.
You've laid
eyes on the man.
Yes.
In an somewhat intimate setting, I would assume. Like, wow, that's really cool.
It's a pretty cool part of being in that, you know, in that college, in that performing arts college.
I bet. So. Yeah. The second or third thing I thought about was like, oh, I wonder if he shows up at the graduation to like hand out the things. Yeah.
That's the thing. It's pretty dope.
Right. Wow. Yeah. I'm getting nervous just thinking about that. Holy shit.
This is what I said to Peter. I was like, let's get Paul at the bowl. Come on, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah. And has that happened?
Not yet. Maybe he's working on it over there.
You know, I don't know. There's got to be a way where you can rig like the bowling alleys so that like you bring people in there and they get like a great score. Like, I don't know. You have like a special alley that's like looped, like, I don't know, like engineered so that people hit strikes on it.
And that's about, is that what we would do if he came?
That's the draw.
Oh, okay. So you're always winning. You're never losing at
right,
Brooklyn Bowl.
Right. Come to Brooklyn Bowl. We guarantee you'll bowl the greatest, like, I don't know. All the,
but I think the key would be is that they don't know it's rigged. We have to rig it just enough so that people just think they're naturally gifted. Very, so just like a little bit of failure, just enough to keep you on your toes.
You're clearly well-versed in massaging the guests' egos.
Exactly. That's years of experience, love.
Yeah, yeah. Do most of the guests play, like when you have talent come in, they'll play, like they can go roll a little bit?
Yeah, so like when we're open, bowling is going on. The restaurant's going on, the bars are happening. So it's all happening at once. It's a lot of stimulation.
I haven't been to Brooklyn Bowl. I haven't been to Brooklyn, but I've been to Nashville.
You haven't been to Brooklyn?
No, not yet. Not since
we got to get you over here.
Well, I mean, the next stop, like, I think I haven't been to New York since the inception of Roadcase. I think the last time I was there was like in 2019, I think, for My Morning Jacket. I show at Forest Hills, but next time I'm in New York, I haven't been to New York since. So, or maybe I have one or two times. I don't know. But then my next stop, I'm coming by for sure.
Okay, please do. Please. Please let me know.
The Nashville has the lanes are off to the side, but like in Brooklyn, and this is elementary for people that are listening and have been there, but I was just curious. Mm-hmm. The lanes are right there where the venue is?
Yeah. So they're basically stage left, just right on the side there. It's all kind of in one zone. We're like Nashville, the restaurant's a little bit off to the side. For ours, you walk in, the restaurant's right in front of you.
The lanes are
shoe
there.
Desk is to the right. Yep. You turn to the left. You've got your venue bar. You've got the stage, and then the lanes. So one big building.
Yeah, I watched a bunch of live streams. Over the pandemic that were from Brooklyn, and it's a legacy building in Brooklyn. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's an old steel mill factory. Very old. I mean, the structure is just. We have a book at the Bowl, which is. Before my time there, of just the construction and then like ripping everything out and the bones, the factual foundation. It's just, it was a pretty amazing build and what they did out of the place.
I bet.
Pretty incredible. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes like pre-existing buildings, like, can be difficult to put venues in. Cause you're like, you can't do it like exactly the way that you would envision it in your head and put it on paper. You have to deal with the existing, building.
The parameters. I would say one thing with our building, which has been pretty incredible to watch the expansion of Brooklyn Bowl and all the different locations. We being the first bowl, you know, with Pete and Charlie and their vision, it's just a totally different concept in the other venues in terms of the space. Mm-hmm. I think that they have learned a lot about what the bowl needs in terms of, you know, customer experience and that kind of thing. So,
flow,
you know,
and things like that.
Yeah, like our coat check is really tiny and, you know, we do our best, obviously we do our absolute best, our offices, we have like one baby office for the entire crew to work out of. So, you know, we've got, you know, there's a core group of, it's actually all women that are working in the office that are, you know, our events team and, you know, our box office manager, our administrator, Leah, our director of HR, we're all in the office. And then we've got our booking department and our marketing. They all sit in the restaurant to work.
All day in the restaurant.
All day. So
that can be kind of fun too. I mean, you're like in a different seat maybe every day. I don't know. There's a psychological, I can spin that in a positive way.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you're spinning it in a positive way. I try to every day sound check is happening.
Okay. There's that. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, the intimate details of why that would be a bummer, of course, but I kind of think like, oh, I get to sit in my brain goes right to, oh, I'm going to sit in a different spot every day. And I have like good light and a view or what, or just like be like, I don't know.
I love it. These musical chairs. Yeah. I mean, it's very intimate. I think that's the one thing we have going for our location.
Right.
All of us have to work very well together because we're on top of each other. So it's a blessing at the same time.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I want to talk about all women at Brooklyn Bowl. I think that's fantastic. And we're gonna get there. You mentioned it. I wanted to let you know. Like, we're gonna talk about that. First, though, growing up in Iowa, as you were a performing arts kid, obviously. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, did you grow up? What was it like growing up there? Family, and what city was it in Iowa, by the way?
Yeah, so I'm from a little town called New Hampton, Iowa. It's northeast Iowa.
Northeast Iowa. So is that near? Is that like Iowa City thing?
Somewhat by Iowa City, like the surrounding. Oh, well, that's fair. That's not too far away. It's about an hour and a half drive. Okay. We kind of like Charles City, Davenport, those kind of places around us. But you know, tiny town vibes, a lot of fields. I grew up on an acreage. My mom, my grandfather, he was the director of our school band 50 years. My mom's also a musician. My mom's side of the family is all music. Okay. But I did a lot of stuff. I was actually quite into sports. That was also my thing.
Cool. Isn't everybody in Iowa kind of like, I don't know.
I guess it kind of have to be. Yeah,
Iowa University has like that's Iowa University in Iowa City. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Amazing sports facility. I mean, not like it's a Big Ten school, so obviously it's gonna have amazing sports facilities. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was there once because my oldest daughter is now 26. Was a competitive swimmer in high school, and they had like the national championships there, some a meet there at some point. So I spent some time there once. I did bring my bike though. Speaking of athlete, and rode around. I was like, oh. Cornfields are like a real thing in Iowa, even in like a big city like Iowa, a big city, quote unquote. Iowa City. Like you go 5 minutes out of town and you're in the corn, you're riding through cornfields, which is cool.
Yeah, it is kind of wild. I never get old, to be honest with you. As soon as I like touch down in Iowa, get in the car, start driving, I'm just like, cornfields. It's just so pretty and it's so peaceful, and you know all the barns and you know the cattle. It's just such a very like scenic. Like it's a very romantic scene, you know, if you're looking at it from that point of view. I mean, I obviously have this other like
talk about positive spin.
Brooklyn, I mean, I have...
but we're talking like Iowa's like the greatest place in the world now.
Listen, it's a really nice place to live. You know, it's different, you know, different vibes for different people, you know, and that's right. What I always say. I always appreciate going home and, you know, my parents are lovely and they have a lovely home and, you know, it's
right.
It holds a dear place in my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. So growing up there, performing arts, obviously. Were you like you were the school play? You were probably homecoming queen, all that kind of stuff, right?
All that jazz, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, I had a nice high school time. I was really friendly with everyone. I did it all. Like I did sports, I did music, I was class president. You know,
you were homecoming queen, right?
I was on the court.
You were in the court.
I was on the court.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I played sax in the jazz bands. That was another big thing of mine that I did. Good old alto saxophone.
What was the play your senior year that you were in?
We did Wizard of Oz, and I was obviously Dorothy.
Obviously.
That sounded a little pretentious. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, what else was there, really? No, obviously you were Dorothy. Yeah, sure, of course.
And our little dog, we had a little Yorkshire Terrier. She actually made a debut on the stage, and she played Toto.
It was your dog?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so that
was my mom's dog, but yeah, all right. It worked.
So that worked because the dog followed you wherever they wanted on stage. Uh-huh. It looked like it was your dog because it was.
And sat in the basket on the bicycle.
Oh, my God.
It was very, very sweet.
Nice. And your voice is amazing. And you're a recording artist. You put out an album back in 2009, album Carousel is the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's great. I listened
to
it. I liked it. Yeah.
Thank you. That's like, it's like Baby Anna. That's what when I look at it, when I hear it,
you go back and listen to it.
No, not so much. different time in my life. But you know, I was very proud of that. It was, just to touch base on that. So like I moved to New York, I got a casting agency here. It was for acting. Mm-hmm. So I did that for, about a year and change. I, did a show that toured for like 6 months to get my equity card. I don't know if you know much about live theater in New York City, but, or anywhere. But the equity card is something that you have to get to basically get the good auditions, do that kind of thing. So I ended up doing that, you know, gaining this card. And then I came back and I was auditioning. And it wasn't for me. I just said, I think I want to be focusing on music. Mm. And so that was when that all started.
Yeah, I mean, acting is a tough business. Wow. Just, you have to take so many personal knocks. I don't know how people can do it.
It is dedication. It is dedication.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, I look at the music industry, I'm like, you got people, you have to be doing what you love, or else, because you're just, you're, you have to do it every single day, all the time, with passion, be in the right place, do your things. And
you also have to be okay to not have work for a long time.
As an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, yeah, but, you know, comparing it to being a musical artist, I was saying, like, you kind of have to do what you love, because it's really difficult. But I think it's like just exponential. It feels, maybe because I'm not in that drama business, but it feels like way more daunting. And, you know, you have to be so much more, it's exponentially more difficult, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Wow. So anyway, you're not in that, but you came back to New York after Liverpool, and then so you were kind of doing the acting thing, I would assume, and then you were waitressing or serving or what's the politically correct term for that now? I don't know. Working in a restaurant environment.
Very politically correct. actually, my first job when I came to New York, I nannied for an Upper East Side family.
Okay.
They're two kids.
Right. That tracks.
That was quite the experience.
Yeah. Did you like the kids?
I did like the kids. It was fun. It was just just very different.
I guess, how can you not like the kid? I mean, what are they going to like, kicking in the shins? I mean, the better question was, did you like the parents?
I did. It was a lovely family. They were very, very nice. And the children were nice. And, you know, I saw New York in a different way those first months that I moved here, because, you know, I'm picking them up from school and I'm seeing, you know,
you're in the Upper East Side echelon, that whole rarefied thing. Was like a wealthy family, or was it sort of where'd the kids go to school?
Very different. I don't even remember. I can't even remember.
All right.
Definitely private, though.
This is like private. Lower school. I assume. But
yeah.
Lower school.
It was because I also hadn't lived in New York too. So those first months, my first apartment was Upper East Side, but like 95th and 1st. So I would ride my bike to them on 72nd and Park, and I would be with the kids all day. Yeah. If I had an audition, I could go do that, which was great. They were very flexible. They were really great, because obviously your auditions and that kind of thing happen at different times during the day. So having a flexible job was super, super important when I first moved here. But that didn't stick for too long. I got cast in the show, then I left and I came back. And then the next best thing, I was like, what do I do? How do I make money? You know, so there was a little hosting. I managed a shoe shop.
Believe me, I lived in New York. I moved there in 88 to do grad school at NYU. And then I lived there from until 99. But right after I was in grad school, and when I was in grad school, I did a bunch of different odd jobs and stuff. And like, that's just what you do. Is pretty easy to find stuff to do at that point, way back then. Yeah. I don't know how it is now, but I mean, there's so many people with so many needs. You just have to figure what those needs are and just fill them.
For me, it was just like, go on Craigslist. Who's hiring? That's what it was. It was just like, I don't know how people get, I don't think Craigslist is used like that anymore. I don't know. Maybe for the lower entry jobs. Not sure.
I don't know. I can't even weigh in on that. but you did get some parts acting, you said, and then what, like the audition process was kind of like fucked up, and then you decided to be in music and.
Yeah. I mean, I was in the routine of going on these auditions. And just, I was just like, this is not the world.
Yeah.
That I think I'm meant to be in. So I was just like, look, I'm going to just dedicate myself to writing this album, and I'll get the funding for it and I'll go and record it. Kind of a strange process, because I think that there's other ways to do it, like, I don't know, starting a band first and going that way.
Unless you're just a vocalist and that's
So I play piano. That's when that's the base of it. Singer songwriter, so piano and vocals. And for that album, one of the guys that worked in the studio that I was working at, he basically wrote a four string quartet kind of vibes for behind it. So it was a really cool process.
Yeah. Well, I liked it. I mean, it was really nice. Absolutely listenable stuff. Great stuff. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was such a beautiful time in my life, because I was so dedicated and just like, this is my baby and this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, it was funny how it all panned out, because I ended up, you know, working with people to try to get this music out to different places. And months after I released this, I get my dad like called me and said, oh, because he works for the school system. He said, a girl came up to me at school and she heard one of your songs on this show. Mm. I was like, huh. So I go do some research. And I'm like, oh my God, like my songs are on this big time TV show. They ended up getting a hold of me, but this is through Jingle Punks, a publishing company. And it was just so wild how that all happened. And then that's, spurring into other things, which was fabulous, obviously. Yeah. Then I started a little band and we played out in a bunch of places in the city, all the piano bars, the living room and Bitter End and that kind of thing. So
you've done the whole thing. So you had experience in venues and such, which I'm sure factored into kind of having some experience in the music business at least, right?
Yeah,
you weren't going in cold. Cause like you eventually met Pete Shapiro in some random meeting when you were like, it's like you were working at a restaurant.
Yeah. So I was working at this place called Cafeteria, which is on 17th and 7th. It was a morning shift. I was working like morning hours there, like 6 a.m. to 4 p.m., something like that. And yeah, I remember the table he was sitting at. It was in the corner. And I, went over there and I just asked him what him and his person that was there wanted. And it just kind of all happened there.
Did you know it was Pete Shapiro?
No.
Oh, right.
No.
And so tell me how that went. Like, what was that? Clearly you stayed in contact or something.
Yeah. So he tells this story on the regular. It was quite the moment. How the story goes is he asked for my recommendation on the French toast. And I said, excellent choice. And I guess that just all happened there.
You made a big impression on him.
I guess. Yeah. And he says, he's like, look, I don't normally do this. I don't pawn people, but at the end of his breakfast, he just said, here's my card. I just opened a spot, a year ago in Williamsburg. And I was like, oh, I've actually been there. Cause I've been living in Williamsburg since 2008. I had seen the club. I'd been in there and
right.
So I was like, oh, let me check it out. So he ended up getting the GM at the time to reach out to me and set up an interview.
Right.
And the rest is kind of history.
There you go. It's like Lana Turner being like discovered at the Schwab drugstore desk, which is, I don't know why I'm pulling that.
Just like that.
Analogy out of it. I don't know. Isn't that one of those random meeting things that like is Hollywood kind of ish?
It is, and over the years, I just always look back and think like moments turn into like, lifelong experiences, lifelong friendships, relationships. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. There are a lot of moments. I can't remember all, but everyone's got that moment when they kind of like make that turn or met somebody and now here they are doing a thing. Right. I guess Mayor Hawthorne, I was just talking to, he's based in LA, great R&B soul stuff. I don't know if he ever come through the bowl. Yeah, I don't know.
He has.
Sort of has a DJ background, but he was in LA and he went to some garden party, like a house party or something in the backyard. And there was a famous DJ there that he had known, but he just gave the guy the card randomly, like, hey, I like you. Or I don't know, I'm paraphrasing the story. But yeah, one of those. And he turned him on to another producer, go see this guy. And then that was sort of the meeting. I mean, everyone's got that one turning point.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, right? There's always something that kind of sends you in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. But clearly you've got like a vivacious vibe and a great personality. And, I talked to Pete about like just wanting to have great people on board, so that all tracks.
Yeah.
So tell me about that. How did that, going forward, what did that look like? Like you showed up at the place and all of a sudden you're the GM? No. Like you've only been the GM for like a little while, as I understand it, but you've been at Brooklyn Bowl for since then, like 2010-ish or something like that, right?
Yeah, just 11. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I went and I had an interview and I think, it was really funny because I trained a couple shifts as a server on the lanes. Yeah. And I was like, I can't do this. It's too loud. Like I didn't want to ruin my voice. So I was like, I was very protective of that. And
sure.
It took a little while for me.
That's interesting. It is fucking really loud.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're trying to communicate with guests. So it was like a combination of like, I don't want to lose my hearing. I don't want to lose my voice if I'm singing.
Yeah, right.
That's an aspect of it. So it took a little while for me to get inundated. I worked in the restaurant for you know, a majority of those first shifts. When I was there, then eventually, you know, was like, hey, I want to be more involved. I want to do more stuff here. Uh-huh. I really went, like, I took a turning point to being like, hey, I actually see this place as like a part of my career path. If that makes sense.
Cause it was a music venue, because you were, I mean, big picture, you were going from one waitressing job to another. However, there's exactly. The kind of thing, like, I'll take a job in a mailroom because it's at like fucking X, Y, and Z corporation. And that's what I want to do eventually. Was that sort of, I get that, that was kind of like the thing, or were you not smart at the time? I don't know.
I was definitely not that smart. I'm definitely not that smart.
You could take credit for it if you want though.
No, I probably shouldn't. That would just be lying. Yeah. No, I think the thing is, for me, let's be honest. I didn't have to get on a train every day. I could just walk to work in 10 minutes. I lived in the area.
So it was just pure convenience. That's all.
Convenience. No. But also the vibe there, the music. I got to work. So I'm paying my rent while being in a venue with really fucking good music.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah, I would much prefer to do that than,
right, than being on this place on 17th and 7th. I don't even know what's going on in that area. I'm trying to picture 17th
and
7th.
It's a very cool spot. Cafeteria is a very cool spot. It's very cool.
Is it still there?
Yeah, for sure.
7th, around 14th and 7th is kind of where, maybe I'm thinking 8th, like Chelsea-ish, lower Chelsea. Yeah. But mm-hmm. aren't there like a lot of really spectacular big like condo or business buildings in that, on that street, right?
Yeah, yeah, there's
something.
Some,
I'm there's trying some... to remember the vibe.
It's good. I love Chelsea. I think it's got some of the best like streets. They're very broad. Yeah. The buildings are beautiful. Yeah. Yeah,
I like
Chelsea's
a mixed-use, sort of lofty kind of loft sort of places, you know?
Yeah.
Soho's old.
We have a lot of that in Williamsburg now, too.
What's that?
Yeah. So, yeah. Williamsburg is like that, too. I mean, I don't know when the last time you were in actually Williamsburg.
Yeah, who knows? I don't, yeah.
It is a completely different scene. Yeah. From when it was when I first moved here. I mean, it is wild.
Yeah. I mean, we could do a whole hour on the changes in New York, which you're way more expert than I am. I mean, I can tell you about what it was like way back then when like Soho was cool instead of super bougie. I knew like Soho before they moved all the big retailers in there. You could walk around and it would look like super mellow and cool. Like the back, you know, like the background of the Bob Dylan cover, you know?
Yeah, it's now it's like, yeah, you know, it's YSL. And
what were you
going to
say? Were you going to say that you like it or not?
I have to admit, I do. There are some days that I will just go into Soho and walk around and think about all the nice, lovely things that
you can buy.
That I can't buy, but okay. I aspire.
Yes. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, there's that. There's that, too. I do go there and walk around. So what? Was there a turning point kind of, 'cause you're the general manager of this place, you like landed there, you were waiting tables. This is an amazing work success story. I'd have to say that, you know, clearly you're not
at the
end of it, but you know, just looking at it, you know, you worked your way up the ranks. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I started as a server. I started cross training in all these other areas and just learning the house. And, you know, I think for me, it was the time. It was just the sheer amount of years spent in the building and understanding what the brand was, what Pete's vision, what Charlie's vision is, the clientele, what we stand for. That just came with time. It really, truthfully. So I served and I started bartending. I got offered an operational manager role. So it's just sheer time spending with people.
And liking the vibe and feeling like,
sure.
And feeling like you fit in there.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and again, the music aspect of it, like having these regular bands coming through and knowing their faces, and it just felt so, and it still does feel so like homey, like a lot of love is being shared.
Yeah. There's
room.
Everyone's on the same page. Everyone loves the music and they know the music and they know the bands, or they know that there's bands coming through and maybe they're not familiar with that band, but they love music and they knew the band that was there 2 days ago or knew of them or familiar with the music, et cetera. And just like, it's that, you know, the thing that impresses me most about Pete, with respect to the ethos is just that everyone's there because they want to make the experience as great as possible. And I'm kind of remembering, like Pete would talk about, just the lines in the bathroom, even down to that level of detail, and how can we reduce that? Or, you know, waiting for beers, and, you know, what is that impact? What is the impact of every touch point have on an individual that's a guest at our venue? And it's that level of drill down. You know, we've got a couple venues like that. We've got great venues in Chicago and some that have that kind of similar vibe, where it's just that focus on the guest experience. Mm-hmm. Throwing you in a fucking venue with dirty bathrooms, exactly, and stuff. And there's several of those here in Chicago.
There's several of those here too.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's the thing that makes Brooklyn Bowl so different and unique. It's not just a music hall. It's not just a music venue.
It's not just the bowling alleys.
It's not just a bowling alley. It's not just a restaurant. It's not just a bar. It's like, it's so multifaceted,
right,
that the attention to detail is absolutely needed for it to thrive and for the customers to have a great experience. If there isn't that attention to detail, I mean, it's just, you're running amok. You know, it has to be precise and everyone has to be on board with, you know, policies and procedures and, right, you know, the fun comes with that.
Yeah.
That's really how it is.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to, like, I'm not making this, this is not, don't, do not paint me with this analogy, but like, I love Disneyland. And I think that there's such a focus on customer relations and what the experience is from a very micro level, you know, and it sounds really geeky to say that about that, but that's pretty renowned. And when you can focus on the customer experience in that regard, I think it's really adds so much to having guests that want to come back, that, you know, you just have nothing bad to say about it. Like, it was just a great experience all around, and where the food is good. And you just, you know, in my analogy, you know, you want to bring your kids, which you have kid stuff too there as well, but yeah, it's that overall experience. And it's just so rare in the music business.
It is. I mean, we were just in Disneyland for an event, with Live Nation, or not Disneyland, Anaheim. But we did go there, and I remember just like walking around being like, God, this is like huge. There's so many operational functions that go into making this. Like how many general managers does Disneyland have? You know, like,
yeah,
it within little or each organization. And like, you know, I really did think about Brooklyn Bowl. It's like the same thing for us. It's like there's so many different things going on. And it may, for me, it's like, you know, any specific night might feel like it's just absolute mayhem and chaos. But as long as the customer does not see that or feel it, we've been successful.
Well, yeah, they shouldn't see it. Yeah.
You seem exactly.
Like a pretty calm person.
Most of the time.
Yeah. So what does it feel like to be GM?
You know, it's about
heavy is the weight of the crown. What is that? What is the,
I think heavy is the weight of the crown. I think you had it. Something like that. You know, I've been there for so long, and I feel really grateful that those that, you know, had faith in me to take this position on. I first of all, I feel really grateful for that. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot with the different crux of the business and how the business runs. You know, I was on a different side of it all. And now I'm doing okay. You know, it took me just a second to like, not feel like I was, you know, in a whirlwind. I'm enjoying it, and a lot of learning coming with this.
What precipitated was there just a job opening presented itself? I don't know what occurred there I guess from looking at, from what I know, you went to director of operations and all of a sudden it was GM. There's obviously some personnel movements at the top or something.
Yeah. There was some different parts moving around, and, our former GM has moved on into a different role with the company, and he's amazing. And I learned a lot from him.
Who was that?
Stephen Schwartz.
Okay.
So that's when that transition happened, and it happened, you know, pretty seamlessly, which was a positive thing, I think, for us in-house. You know, again, different personnel moving around. So, you know, one thing that I have learned is like being this person who's now in charge of everything, you know, in a way it takes a village, it takes a team, and having the respect of all the department heads and people that fall under the department heads, that is absolutely, it's key to running this business.
Yeah.
It's the respect.
And so let's talk about, it's run by all women in all of the key positions at Brooklyn Bowl. Let's talk about that.
Not so much. I mean, like, our office space is definitely all women vibes. I would say, you know, I went through the roster the other day.
I mean, now that you kicked this guy out to get the GM job.
Don't say that. Don't say that. There is a lot of women. I think, like, our events team is women, our marketing team is women, our admin is women. Our head of booking is Lucas Sachs. Paul used to work with him, obviously, at Brooklyn Bowl. He's the director. And then Chef he's a man as well, obviously.
Right. With Blue Ribbon.
So he's actually our employee now, but he used to work with Blue Ribbon. He was with them for a very, very long time. And then
Blue Ribbon has been around forever. For those that don't know, it's like a staple of, I think that when I want to say, and you'll probably correct me, wasn't the original Blue Ribbon in Soho? Like, not like, because we were talking about it. I seem to recall.
Sullivan Street.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was Soho. No. Was it north of Houston? I don't know. I can't remember. It was in like Sullivan off to the west side of Soho. But I think it was, Sullivan and Thompson, something like that. I don't know. I'm getting it wrong.
I got to fact check that. I don't want to get that
please
wrong.
Please do.
I don't something want Bruce like, and Eric Bromberg to be like, upset with me right now.
Yeah. Okay. Don't. All right. Don't mean to put you on the spot. Put me on the spot. I'll take the heat on that one. But So there's women in key roles. I mean, that's
a lot of ladies.
Is that
a lot of ladies.
Do you feel that's unique for a music venue? Is that something that was intentional or... tell me.
I would say it hasn't been intentional. It's just kind of happened overnight. It has been a 180 from what, you know, Brooklyn Bowl looked like, I don't know, example before COVID. It just kind of happened. When I first became an ops manager, I think it was, let's say there were seven of us. I think two or three of us were women. Uh-huh. And now it's all of our ops managers are women.
Yeah.
So it's
great.
Except for our director of ops, but it's just, right. I don't know. It's just kind of happened like this. And I think,
Well, if you're hiring the best people, and oftentimes the best people are women. So there you go.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I'm one of those people again, like, you know, I was hired by Peter, you know, obviously Charlie has been a huge advocate for me too. I have two really positive role models in these two men. I haven't, you know, necessarily had a whole lot of female role models in this setting. But it's okay. That's just the way it is. And now I get an opportunity.
Yeah. I was going to say, now there's people that are working, that are looking at you to be as a role model now going forward. Yeah. That's great.
Sometimes people just need the opportunity. You know, the thing is that people are overlooked for whatever reasons they are. It's my job to make sure that no one's overlooked.
Yeah. It's that bigger picture of, it doesn't matter what your gender is or, you know, what you look like. It's, from a hiring perspective, that should be the vibe. And that's what starts the snowball getting bigger. Right. But then, there needs to be other, so that now there are other people in those roles so that the people below, or younger, I don't want to say below. I don't mean it by like that. You know what I mean? That are less experienced. I'm not good with the corporate speak as good as well as you
that
are.
That was excellent.
You're
you
sitting
know, I
there
love that.
And biting your tongue. Like, I got to tell this guy what the corporate word is.
Oh, no, I'm just patient. I love that.
Okay,
that was great.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Less experienced individuals. But to see people that look like you is very important, and that things just start getting more people in those roles, and then we're just more it's more representational. And I applaud that, and I think that's just the way the world should be.
Thank you. I feel very blessed for the team that we have and how it's evolving. And it's good. It's very good vibes right now. And there's a lot of communication, which is super, super important. I think women bring a little different communication to the table.
You can say better. Come on.
I did not say better. I said different.
It's different. Well, every individual is different.
Yeah.
Women, I think, look, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they're more emotionally aware. That's not a big ass limb to go out on. Okay.
No, I think you're pretty on point with that.
Right. But you know, I do my best and I think I'm pretty good at that, but that's just me. But yeah, I mean, as a big picture, I think that's correct. Yeah. Well, tell me what it means to be general manager of Brooklyn Bowl now that you're sitting in the big chair.
It's a big responsibility. And, you know, I, every day that I'm going through this and learning more about just literally just the innards of the business, I don't know. I feel like I'm using, first of all, just a different side of my brain that was never used before. You know, going to school for acting and music and that kind of thing. And now it's like, I'm looking at Excel sheets and that kind of thing. For me, it's like, I always want to make sure that the vision is on point. I want to make sure that our brand is on point. And, you know, and that's, you know, this is when we talk about Pete and that kind of thing. Like, that has to be, the vibes have to be there. And so for me, I have been, you know, going about business is trying to keep as even headed as possible. Like, we are here to have fun and the vibes have to go, but like, we have to also be fair and actually work and get business done. Right. So that's been a big part, I think. And also when I just said the communication, I think one thing that when I first stepped into this role, a big, big part of me taking this on was saying, hey, we need to work on our communication, everyone. We have to talk more. We have to talk about, you know, not just our feelings, but like how we feel in our roles and what I can do to support people. This is my job, is to support every single department.
Yeah.
So that has been a big one for me. And, I think I'm, you know, learning and doing better every day.
Yeah. So you're talking like interfacing and corporate. What about outer facing vibe that you have to be aware of? Because clearly that's an important part of what Brooklyn Bowl is as well. And that's what makes talent want to keep coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I think being at Brooklyn Bowl for this 13 years, I feel very comfortable. So I love the fact that I can, you know, dab up an agent's hand or, you know, whoever's coming through with the band, and like those relationships are super, super important. And having that welcoming vibe when they're coming in for sound check or whatever it is. Obviously our customers, our longstanding customers, you know, people that have been married and, you know, had their receptions in the building and literally just, you know, this is, I think about this too. This is Pete and Charlie's, this is their city, you know? So we get all of that. We get the families here, the family, not family, but you know, that showing a good face for the bowl is super, super important. Always and forever. Like dressed and pressed. You got, you know, that's the way to win, I feel.
Well, what are you saying? Like, it's like, it is super important. This is the flagship Brooklyn Bowl. This is the Brooklyn Bowl.
But, I want it to look the best. That's my thing. This is the vibe I want. I want us to be, you know, have the best of the best. And whatever I can do to create that, whether it's the environment or, you know, getting people to laugh, whatever it is. Right. That's
what are your specific metrics for that? Like, what do you look to?
Like metrics, what do you mean?
Yeah, like ways that you can measure that.
Oh, within our
vibe is one thing. I'm all about vibe. Okay, fine. Yeah. But I mean, just like, and I agree with you, but are there certain specific like metrics that you want to see, like things like in your head? Okay, if we're doing this the right way, then we're succeeding. You know, if we're, the hospitality needs to be a certain way and we need to have this sort of like with artist interface and the customer like experience during a show and with security and like, what are those things that make you think that you're succeeding in what you want to do? Like a couple examples.
I mean, obviously we're running a business. So the biggest example would be like, what are our books looking like?
Yeah.
You know, like what are we doing through the course of the evening on any given night in terms of like upsells and that kind of thing? Cause that's obviously how we keep the doors open, the lights on, keep our staff happy. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a big thing for me, is just going from the absolute like the absolute bottom. You know, if I have a busser that's coming in and I know that his paycheck, because of what we're doing in-house, you know, the lines are not long at the bar. Our POSI system's running, you know, efficiently. So orders are being taken. Our servers are up to speed with getting checks to customers or taking drink orders or that kind of thing. I know that our bussers are, their paycheck is going to be good. Like that's what I look to.
Right. It's also an art. Is there an artist factor there as well? Like certain artists bring certain clientele, certain guests, and they spend more or not. So that affects affects everything from that's kind of where it starts.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely, especially after working there for, you know, however many years, you know how much a night's going to on average bring in, you know, whether it's going to be a huge beer drinking crowd.
Right.
This group is going to be, you know, people, you know, 40s to 60s that are definitely going to want to eat before they watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
So all those are all the metrics. And
they get hungry and cranky. You don't want hungry, cranky people.
No. You gotta get them fed. Or, you know, also like knowing with our events team, how many bowling lanes they have booked for a night. You know, it's all based on ticket sales, the events that are running, whether or not it's a younger or an older crowd. Mm-hmm. All of these things are the metrics that go into how much we can say we're probably going to make for an evening and then see how that pans out.
Yeah. Like I went to a couple of younger people shows recently and boy, there was just no one at the bar. It just happened to be the artist and the vibe and what they were talking about. And like, yeah, it just was not, it was like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Or, you know, it'll be a really, really busy show, but like, you know, it's a little bit of a druggy crowd. So they're not drinking so much, you know, they're asking for water. Or, you know, or it'll be like Bruce in the USA, which comes, you know, twice a year. It is a huge, like I said before, beer drinking crowd. So we
Bruce
know
Bruce in the USA. What is that, like a Bruce cover band or something?
Yeah. Yeah. They were just here. They're amazing. They're so amazing.
Yeah.
But you just know, like, it's going to be men in a certain age group that want a certain type. Or, you know, it's going to be like, you know, a creative content, like a DJ night, you know, we're going to be not, you know, rocking out Trulies or tequila sodas. You know, that it's, we have such a range.
It's so much, be so fun to just look at that and like, you know, just like, you know, the so much about the demographic of who, what band fans drink what, and probably like to the letter.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's happened over the years.
It's,
you get to know,
though, isn't it? It's
kind of interesting. But I mean, that's the thing too with Brook and Bowl is that it's not just one type of music that comes in. I mean, we just have such a broad range that it's like,
was I going in that direction? No, I'm not saying, I'm not implying that at all. Yeah. Okay.
No, not at all. But the thing is that to be in this position, and not only me, but like, you know, everyone else that works there, we have to understand our fans to be able to run the business properly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We have to understand these demographics.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, you got to have enough truly stocked for the disco crowd.
Yeah. Give me disco.
Nothing's anything wrong with that, but like, it is a thing, you know. I've got my middle kid's like, she's a senior at Tulane. Yeah. That's the thing. That's what they're drinking when they're going out.
See, there you go.
Yeah. What's your drink?
I'm a dirty vodka martini girl. That's my
nice. I don't drink enough vodka martinis because I get hammered when I drink those things.
Oh, that's fair.
I need to drink more, but I mean, yeah, give me like a whole like 6 ounces of straight up vodka. I do love olive juice, that's for sure. I mean, it's like, I have no problem with that. What's security? Let's talk about that a little bit. That's always kind of interesting. Like, mm-hmm. I know, like, tell me about what the vibe is there. And, you know, I go to a lot of shows. There's like different vibes and security. And like, what do you tell your people? Like, what's a good place to start? Like, tell me about what you're looking for and some of the biggest challenges, because that's a challenging area, especially today with so many security concerns.
It's a massive challenge. I mean, one thing just straight out of the gate that we talk about our branding in terms of like how, you know, guest interfacing. One thing that you'll notice when you come to Brook and Bowl is that the security guards, they don't say security on the back. They say welcome. Right.
That's a Pete thing. That's from Bill. That's a Bill Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. When he put the vet, he didn't have Hell's Angels security or something. That was Altamont. But like, no, it was like, wasn't that a Bill Graham thing from like the Fillmore or the Winterland or something? Originally put guests or on the, with the security guys with the vest was it welcome? Probably.
Welcome. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a big thing for us. And it's been, we've always had a very light touch. We obviously want to keep everyone safe. That's super, super important, but it's not one of those venues that you come in and it's like the security guards bouncing people out. Like, that's just not our thing.
Yeah.
It was actually quite a challenge coming back from COVID. And I know that it wasn't just us, but staffing our security team after coming back,
like personnel,
it was very, very, very challenging. And we actually only have currently one of our own security guards. That's with Brook and Bowl. The rest of it, we work with this company. Funnily enough, the head of this company used to be one of our security guards and our head of security. We now work with him and his security company.
Because so you used to just run security internally.
Yes, it was all in-house security.
But now it's like the security purveyors or vendors have kind of morphed that landscape.
Yeah,
that's
the industry. Yeah, that's really what's changed a lot of the industry across.
Well, yeah, I would imagine when the venues weren't open, that's like one of the jobs that you could just like, yeah, we can't pay anymore. I mean, there's just like no role for that, right? Among others, right? I'm sure, but it was kind of like the first to go, maybe, and then they reconsolidated on their own. I guess, mm-hmm. right? Is that right?
Yeah. And then these people that were working maybe for, you know, individual companies, they have their security licenses, but they do. They find a company. Yeah.
That's really cool. Like, that's super unique. I mean, that's kind of, was it a coincidence or something that this security that you use is run by someone that used to be at Brooklyn Bowl?
It was not a coincidence. We throughout the years used his company to kind of sprinkle in when we would have somebody who would call out, or if we knew we needed extra guards for whatever night it was. So we were already guards. Yeah, extra
There's
guards.
Something funny about that. Okay. All right.
Just the lingo, extra guards. Yeah. So we, you know, we had been using him, and then, you know, after coming back from COVID, it was like, okay, how many in-house guards do we have? And then how many do we need to supplement from him? Right. And then it just turned out that now it's just basically, you know, we're using him as the company. And, you know, it hasn't been always the smoothest ride. But I feel like we're in a fantastic place now where, you know, the biggest thing for us is that because operationally, it's not just like, you know, we've got steps that lead up to a seat and we just have, you know, security guards that are standing there like ushers. It's not that at all. There's just stuff happening all around the house.
Yeah.
So for them to know what we stand for, how we treat guests, also just points of service, all of that, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to train somebody. And when they're not in-house, we're expecting, you know, and hoping that the company can do part of that on their own.
Yeah. So what you're saying, it's good to work with a company that has like an intimate familiarity with Brooklyn Bowl.
100%. Right. Absolutely.
But does this company also, I'm just curious, do they work for other venues in the city?
I know that, I think we're the only actual venue that they do this like music venue, but I know they supplement their guards to other different places. Like there was an art installation down the street in one of the buildings. And I know some of his guards were working down there,
right?
Like contracted, that kind of thing.
I was just wondering if they do the welcome vest thing at other venues. Have you patented that? You should patent that whole license that whole concept.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
You heard it here. Booking, how much input do you get to have, and what do you tell me a little bit about that now from the top? What does that look like?
I
just keep like wanting to make you say, because it's new and I love it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there was a learning curve for me understanding like how we actually book bands and the process, and you know, I'm super, super, I love knowing about it now and getting involved. And you know, before this call, I was on the phone with my head talent buyer, Lucas Sachs, just like right before I got on this call, just to suss out, you know, just even financials, that kind of thing.
Who is that now?
Lucas Sachs.
Okay.
And he's been with the Bowl for, I think, at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wealth of knowledge on how the crux of this business works. And right. The Brooklyn Bowl way of doing things. Uh-huh. I was extremely, first of all, we have a great relationship, so that was helpful. Coming into this and being like, I really don't know much about this world. I need help. Can you teach me? And he's been very patient and kind and, you know, talks me through from, you know, beginning to end of how we, you know, talk to talent agencies, that kind of thing, working out deals, offers, how we build them in Rome, how that gets put into an agreement. And then obviously that gets transferred to what we do in service.
What is Rome? Is that is that like a back end software? What did you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Rome. Yeah.
Like R-O-A-M?
R-O-M-E.
Oh, like Rome, like the city for some reason.
Rome. Yeah.
Okay. I was just there in December for my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
And I don't mean Rome, Georgia, or whatever the other one. There's probably like seven Romes something in the United States. I'm in Rome, Italy.
That's fun.
Thank you.
Did you have some pasta?
Did I have pasta? No, I didn't. I went to Italy and I didn't eat pasta. Of course I had pasta. Although, you know, I remember like, because I've lived in Italy over the years, but yeah, it gets a little tiring to have like pasta every day. But
Did you have some nice wine?
It's always delicious. drank some nice wine. I went by myself, so I didn't drink as much wine as I would. Like, oh, let's have a bottle or something, because I'm just like, not that I'm not drinking a whole bottle. Back to the whole, like, drinking a martini is going to get me hammered. yeah, it was great. Anyway, so Rome, so that software. So you're dealing with, anyway, yeah. I get off on the tangents, which is fun.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's an booking is always super interesting, obviously, because that's the interface that you have with touring, with the industry, with musicians, with guests, you know, bringing them on. Like,
and it's a competitive industry too. I mean, you think we're in the heart of Williamsburg. There's other venues around us, and like, the thing too with our venue is, yeah, we are a bowling alley. We do have a restaurant. What drives the business is our shows. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. So making sure we have great shows is crucial. It makes or break an evening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, people are coming there to see the music primarily.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How much traffic do you see just for people that are coming bowling? I mean, you have like open days, right? I don't even look at Brooklyn. Like, I would, if I had one in my city, Pete, thanks for not building one in Chicago. You know, I would go because it's Brooklyn Bowl, right? And it's fucking cool, and the food's phenomenal. But yeah, no. So I don't really scan like Brooklyn to see like when I can just come in and bowl.
But that's the thing. It's crazy. So like the other venues that they're, you know, how their business is running with their bowling is a little different than ours. We are like an institution in Williamsburg. So if you want to come in to bowl on a Wednesday night when we're open for bowling, I mean, we can get up to a 20 name wait list. You know, on a normal open for bowling night.
Yeah.
The other thing to note, it's our events. It drives us as well. I mean, we have these big shows.
Thanks for mentioning that, because it's like not front of mind for me. But yeah, weddings and this and that and the other.
Bar mitzvahs and corporate. I mean, during the holiday season, it's just like that will block up, you know, depending on, you know, this is something that the events team and the booking team has to have really, really good communication.
Right.
You know, if we get an event that we know is going to crush, obviously we're going to take that. You know, and so it's all about planning that, especially around the holidays, like what shows we have coming in, that the holds for the shows versus events, and seeing which one makes more sense for which day.
Right.
And those are bowling driven too, because, you know, it's a big event. They're bowling, eating, drinking.
Yeah.
And they can also have a band, but it's the other side of the business.
Right. Well, I did, when I was at Brooklyn Bowl, it was, I think, early spring of last year when, Pete did the Relics Live Music Conference in Nashville at Brooklyn Bowl. Mm-hmm. What an amazing facility.
Isn't Nashville?
That is.
It's so pretty, right?
Nashville's fucking great. I love Nashville. I would go there the drop of the hat at any time, but except in the middle of the summer, because it's hot enough there in the spring and the fall. I'm not much of a summer hot weather person. But what an amazing facility. Just from the top to the bottom, there's so many different, there's like little places upstairs with the view. There's a minor league ballpark right behind it that you can
I know.
Like, what? I didn't no idea.
Yeah.
Just such an amazing place to hang out for anything, really. And the food there is phenomenal. I still think about when I sat at the bar, I'm like, it's a conference, right? It's business conference. Fun. Yeah. Great. You know, Andy Frasco was the MC and his band played one night, and Maggie Rose was there. Aaron Ray was there. It was just fucking, it was great, but I was hungry and I had a great meal. I still think about that.
What did you eat?
I think I had the blackened salmon, because I remembered it from like the Blue Ribbon days. Something like that. I remember it from the Blue Ribbon days. So when I was living in New York. What is, give me like some good, like artist fun stuff that you've seen, like what's one of your kind of favorite Brooklyn Bowl stories?
Oh, interesting. This person did not perform there, but this is when I was serving. I don't fangirl a whole lot.
Yeah. That's how this story begins. I don't fangirl except when I'm an actual fan of somebody.
I know. So I was serving in the restaurant, and there's a table, the corner table.
Yeah.
It's table 25, and Chaka Khan was there with somebody and eating, and I was so I don't even remember. I think I blacked out. At the end, though, and I never did.
Well,
I don't
clearly
know,
or else you wouldn't be able to tell me this story.
Facts, true. So when she was finished, I said, look, I don't normally do this, but I just, you know, I want to tell you what an amazing artist you are and the effect you've had on, you know, all types of people. And
yeah.
she stood up and she hugged me. Uh-huh. And I was just like, oh, so that was a
stars. They're just moment. Like us.
I know. But
yeah, it's hard when, you know, to be, you're around a lot of amazing artists, and it's one thing when, you know, it's like a nationally touring artist that you really like, and yeah, okay, this is what they do, and they're cool, and blah, blah, blah. When someone really cuts to, like, the core of your soul from their artistic production that they create, their creativity and what they've created and what they've added to the world of music, yeah, you get a little flabbergasted sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, you think about, like, it's like Stevie Nicks, she sat in one, it was a New Year's Eve celebration. And like, she was, I got cut from my shift and I was standing right next to her. And like the memories of rushing through my head of like how many hours I've spent listening to her songs, Fleetwood Mac, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're right there next to them. And I think that's another thing just to, which I love about Brooklyn Bowl. It's intimate, you know, it's 900, we sell up to 900 tickets, right? So you could have this amazing artist who's on stage that you're like in really close distance to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is very special.
Right. Well, in my business, I try to just, I had Stuart Copeland on the show. That was a big one for me, but you know, he's a cool dude. You know, I mean, did I say like you had, like, I loved what you did. Like when I was a big fan of the Police and I saw them at, oh my God, I can't believe I'm blanking on the major US Festival. In the 80s, and like I've signed other places during that time, the LA Forum after like Synchronicity or Ghost in the Machine tour or something like that. I mean, it was a huge part of my life and I loved him as a drummer, but you know, it was a cool hang and fun talk and everything. And you know, that's kind of where it has to end for me.
Did you fanboy?
Doing what I do. No, I did. Look, I don't think no artist minds when you say how what a big effect you have. You drool on them or like, you know, can't talk. Like that doesn't accomplish anything, right? But yeah, you know, you just, you know how it is.
I know. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's great stuff. But you also, it's also a business, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that, and this is something I tell, you know, we always tell every new staff member coming in through orientation, it's like, look, we get some big stars in here. Doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah.
But when we do, we have to respect them.
Yeah.
Keep your cameras, your phones in your pockets.
Oh yeah. Cameras, your phones. I mean, I didn't even go like, no, that's a fucking no.
Yeah.
But I know you took a picture of Chaka Khan though. Come on.
I didn't. I should have. There's right? Been so then many moments. Like, I'm like God.
Yeah. But well, who cares? It's like, pick or it didn't happen. Like, fuck you.
Listen, I agree. Fuck you. It happened. Okay. I was there. I remember it.
Right. Right. That's the most important thing. You know, to have the picture to post, it's like, you know, there's a business aspect to that as well. What are some of the things that you need to do from a promo perspective? It's just like you know, what are some of the most important things that you're looking at in terms of like, making people aware that there's shows coming out? Is that kind of changing, or what are the most important avenues that you take to do that, to make sure that everyone that are fans of a particular band knows that this is happening? It's got to be easier on social media. I mean, cause like bands are doing it themselves. Right. So it's almost like a slam dunk, but
I mean, like, you know, something to note within any sort of, you know, company, well, any, you know, any venue that's doing shows, there is money for marketing. And, you know, we have two marketing, people, Hannah, she's our marketing director. And like, I really lean on her for her expertise in knowing how much money should go to each show for ads, where these ads should be played at. You know, obviously we're always hitting up like Facebook, Instagram, that kind of thing, but you know, there's other things that you can do. And I love what she's bringing to the table, and like fresh ideas for me right now for the whole team across the board is I'm open to suggestions, because anything to get people to
like, tell me something I don't know, please.
Let's just try things new. I don't know.
Right. But do you have your own promotional arm to Brooklyn Bowl? How does that, it's a little foggy. Like how does that, you know, you're doing your own ads for bands that are coming through, right? You're placing ads, you're putting them in Relics, obviously.
Obviously Relics.
Bands come with like, their booking agents will come with a certain connection that like, because they want fans to come independent of whatever venue it is. So that's also a positive for you. How do you interface with all those different kind of promotional angles?
Yeah. I mean, I think one really big thing for us whenever we're booking a band is like, we need to be ensured that that band is doing their own work,
assured
putting their own money
that,
into
yeah.
it. Yeah. Uh-huh, so that right. they're doing part of that marketing. You know, yeah. it can't solely live on the venue side. That's just not realistic.
No, of course not. Yeah, that's why I was saying like how social media is such a positive in that respect, because you've got your artists doing work that you would do as well for
yeah.
the whole tour.
So
exactly.
So, I mean, it is a lot of communication between the bands. And I'm again, this is like on, you know, our marketing
and
also
the
our booking
agents. And you.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Or your
for
marketing
sure.
person or what. Yeah, okay.
100%. Right. That has to be there. So that's really big. I mean, marketing is half the battle. Like this is across the board with any, yeah. I think with any business, your marketing has to be on point. There has to be a good amount of money for that. Because if you're doing that right, you can, like you said, touch fans that are, you know, you can touch a fan that's living three states away. That's going to drive to see the show.
Yeah.
Because of how we marketed it.
Right. Right.
Marketing across the board too, not just for shows, but just for the venue itself, like food marketing and events marketing. And it's, again, we have a lot of different aspects, so we can have fun and do a lot of different things with that.
The food is so important. I can't say enough about it. Like, okay, you did mention before, like the 40 to 60 crowd wants to eat before the show.
Listen, I just turned 40, so I am in that category now.
I like to eat before the show, and I got to tell you, Thalia Hall, the restaurant downstairs, closed, and I need to get a little bit more of a specific scoop on what's going on. You know, 16 on Center Group here that runs Thalia Hall, Salt Shed, and Empty Bottle, and I love shows at Thalia Hall. I still go anyway, and this was just a recent development as of the new year, but I would go specifically early. Okay. I would, and just to have a bite to eat. And then I'd go up and buy a ticket if I didn't have a ticket for the show or do whatever or get whatever I'm doing. And or go inside, put up my coat on a chair, come back down, have food, and then go back in. Like, it's like a real thing.
It's
important.
It's super important. And that's
so
again,
fun
what
when
makes
there's
us,
like a great place to eat. Too.
Yeah. Like yeah. the food has to be on point. And like, yeah. best thing too, like I've been at plenty of shows where like maybe I'm not so interested in the band and like I'm there with friends and it's like I'm hungry. Like with Broken Bowl, it's so great is that you can just go grab a bite to eat while the show is going on. Not yeah, saying that always happens, but it's you have that ability to do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing about going to a show that maybe you're not so familiar with the artist, and I do that all the time because I love hearing music that I've never heard before. But there's also the aspect of you don't want to do that on an empty stomach. If you're going to have like new input, you want that to be when you're super comfortable. You don't want to be thinking about anything else.
No. And also if you're drinking, okay, if I'm, you know, two martinis in, I got to have a little something in my tummy, you know?
Yes. You are an experienced drinker.
Don't say that.
Hey, you know, people make their own choices, you know, but the jam band thing, boy, you are really well familiar with people getting really spun out at those shows though.
Spun out. That's a good way to say,
right?
Say it. They also spin quite a bit with spinners.
Yeah.
Yes. We call them spinners. They
that's
just
going way back, you know, that's way back to like the dead. Like I would go to a show at Madison Square Garden, Grateful Dead, like pre 95 and like be on the floor and you can look up, you know how when you're at the garden, you can see the light from the promenade shoot through the tunnels and you would just see the silhouettes of the spinners in the tunnels. Because I'm not going out on the promenade during a show. That's ridiculous.
So you weren't a spinner.
I was actually not. Does that surprise you, Anna?
Okay.
Just for the record, I did not just like spin around the show. Although I did, when I went to Dead & Co. over the summer, though, I did like enjoy, there's like, I don't know, at Wrigley, it's probably like this at other stadiums, that it's a stadium for Christ's sake, but there's a whole section off to the side that's like horrible viewing angle, but it's great. Like all the spinning people would like hang out in this area and I just hang out over there. It's great people watching.
Oh yeah.
It was phenomenal.
I've got a lot of videos on my phone from just being fascinated with like, what is happening here? You're just enjoying, you're just enjoying everything about this moment.
Right. I mean,
it's
first blush,
wild.
I would not see you as a jam band person, but.
You know, it's taken me a little getting used to. I
mean, you've been at Brooklyn Bowl for long enough. I mean, have you spoken to Pete Shapiro for 5 minutes?
The Grateful Dead, scene is really prominent.
Rubbed off on you.
Yeah.
Did you even know what the Grateful Dead was when you met when you first came to Brooklyn Bowl?
Not as much as I should have. I love the song Shakedown Street.
I shouldn't have said it like that because I do. I brought a woman that I'd been dating briefly. I brought her to a show at Dead. I think it was a Dead & Co. Not the one I just mentioned, but like the prior tour. Just because we had just started dating, I'm like, okay, I got an extra ticket. Do you want to see the Dead? Okay, fine. I mean, Dead & Co. And I kept asking her, have you heard this song before? Have you heard this? She's like, she got annoyed. Why do you keep asking me this? I'm like, actually, I want to be in the presence. I want to know when I'm in the presence of someone hearing a song that I've heard 1,000 times. This is your first time hearing like Estimated Profit or whatever, like not even, I mean, everyone's heard Truckin' and everyone in the world is Truckin'. Okay, I'm not even gonna mention that, but something like a cool, like Ramble on Rose or some fucking great, cool song that I love. This is the first time you're hearing that. I wanna know. It's not a bad thing. I said it sort of like, had you ever heard of the, like, there's no should or would or could, you know, it's like, it's just whatever people's experiences are. And oftentimes it's more interesting when you know that someone has not been exposed to that because, you know, it could either be the start of a journey, but like you're hearing something for the first time, which is so monumental.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely my experience. I mean, the first couple of years I was like, I don't understand this. I don't understand this music. I don't get it.
Right.
And then like slowly but surely,
it just clicks.
It just starts creeping into your veins and you're like, oh, and then the song comes on. And you're like, oh, funny story about, well, not really funny, but, so I think, I don't know if you know anything about Rock and Roll Playhouse, but this is another Pete venture.
Which
is a huge, huge thing.
Yeah. Tours, right. Is it for kids? It's like
it's kids.
Rock for kids. Yeah. I've seen it. Does it tour? Cause sometimes I see that it's coming through Chicago. They come to Thalia Hall.
Yeah. I mean, it's different bands.
Right.
Cause like, obviously like we'll have a show going on here while there's a show going on in Chicago. So, it's
like
the way I kind of view it as is like, it's a band that's playing a themed show, whether it's like, right. You know, I don't know, David Bowie or the Beatles or whatever, you know, and parents can bring their kids there and the kids can have fun, and the
parents can know the tunes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And right. Then the parents can drink and have fun while the kids are running around.
Yeah.
But the original concept was actually not this at all. It was something very, very different. It was like a whole school, a whole curriculum. And I started getting involved from the beginning of that. At one point in time, I thought, oh, maybe I'll go back to school to be a teacher, to be a music teacher.
Oh, interesting.
And so then this thing happened and Pete was like, you should get in touch with this other woman that was working on it. And so the beginning of it was very different. And the first like 7 or 8 shows that we had, which it originated at Brooklyn Bowl, Brooklyn, we were basically taking the artists. Let's say, you know, J-Rad is playing Saturday night at Brooklyn Bowl. We were then having them play Sunday morning for the kids. So that would that was one of the original like concert portions of that. But I actually sat in with Phil Lesh and sang. Uh-huh. We had him there, which was pretty cool. And I don't think I realized how cool it was at the time. I don't think I realized that, but I do now. I do now.
Yeah, that was like, that could be a Chaka Khan analogous moment for somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Wow. That's cool. Well, J-Rad can do that because they all live in Brooklyn, probably. Presumably.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where exactly they live, but yeah. Wow. Well, Tom lives in Philly. Sky,
yeah,
I don't know where. Yeah, but anyway.
Marco's in Woodstock. He's coming to play.
Now that
soon.
I've said that, that's actually not. I think it's just Joe that lives nearby. But,
yeah, I think he lives in Brooklyn.
At least there was one guy when I just throw that out there.
It's fine.
But wow, you said, yeah, that's really cool. That's totally cool. And I love that whole, the whole kids concept too. It's amazing. But yeah,
it's really
it's about music and like people that just loving the tunes and yet another angle of having, you know, the Brooklyn Bowl is kind of this place to go and that's cool with kids. Thalia Hall here in Chicago has that from time to time. I guess tell me about how's that structured? Is that like it's a band that's like, does Brooklyn Bowl own that or Pete own that whole Rock and Roll Playhouse concept?
Not a Brooklyn Bowl venture, but definitely Pete's World. It's its own Rock and Roll Playhouse, it's its own company.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do work like super, super close hand in hand with them. They're there every Sunday. So obviously we're very, very close with them.
Oh, it's every Sunday. It's like go to church with Rock and Roll Playhouse.
Yep. Go to church with Rock and Roll Playhouse. I like that. We should do some sort of church series. That'd be
interesting. You've gotten a lot of good ideas from me over this course of this chat.
I see that. We should, you know, talk more.
Let's do that.
Give me some good ideas. Yeah. So Playhouse is happening every Sunday. And, you know, the structure of that, we do have, there is one core, you know, Playhouse band that does every Sunday. Every now and then we break away and do something different with it, but it's because it feels like we, but they do this. So there's a core band, and then again, like a theme is chosen and we rock out with that theme for that week.
All right. It's
pretty mental what we can do within doors at, you know, 11 a.m. to wrapping the show at 1:30.
1:30 a.m. How much it goes actually, for like 12 hours.
Oh, yeah.
This goes until nap time. That's my perfect show. I want, like, get some of the rock guys to come in and play at 11 to 1. You can have a nap afterwards. How great would that be?
It would be amazing, actually.
Yeah. See, here's another idea. It's nap time as the music business, as we get older and really, we really start to age out.
I love it.
You know?
I love it.
Okay. So,
I'm putting that one down.
Right. I know. I don't see you writing anything. You should be writing more.
I've got my notepad.
Yeah. Well, wow. This is, is there anything that we haven't covered? I mean, this is just so amazing. And like, I didn't even say congratulations that you're the GM, but now that I know your background and everything, I mean, it's just like, I'm excited for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
How excited are you?
I'm excited. This has been I feel like I've found like a career now. Not saying
now,
that I didn't have that
after
before.
Being there for like over so your career wasn't just bringing food to people so they can stuff their faces?
It's part of it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I feel like I'm in a grown up place now, different than I was before.
Yeah, like we said, heavy. It was what was it? That is a saying, though, right?
Yeah, it is. It's something with the crown being heavy on your head. My director of ops reminds me all the time that it's lonely at the top, and I say you should stop saying that to me. I don't like that.
Why are you feeling lonely?
No, he just does it to mess with me.
That's right before they bring you some bad news that forces you to make a really hard decision.
Yeah. It's like, I appreciate
which I'm sure you
that.
Were doing in operations and before, but now you do have to make hard decisions.
Yeah, it is. There are hard decisions to make, and it's at the end of the day, yeah, we're putting on shows and we're, you know, stopping people's faces with food and fried chicken, but it's about people. It's about the people that work for the company. It's about people that come in that are just, you know, guests. It's about the experience on both ends, you know, show facing and behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And that is what I feel like that's what this job is. It's working with people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. This is what that's what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about bringing people their favorite acts. It's about feeding them. It's about making them feel good. It's all amazing. Thanks, Anna, for being here. This is great. Really great to get to know you. And I'm so glad I know who the general manager is at Brooklyn Bowl now. And I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. And please, you're welcome anytime.
Thanks. Oh yeah. No, next time I swear I haven't been to New York in quite a while. So I got to come back.
Well, you must.
Yeah.
You must.
Yeah. I mean, I would be there now. I'm going to South by Southwest in a couple of weeks, but I would have come to see Tedeschi Trucks. They're doing the Beacon Run right now. So
yeah.
Anyway, can't do it all and work and do the podcast and everything. And so, you know, I'd love to be in so many different places at once. You know how that is.
In another life.
You just sit not in the booth in the restaurant all day and great bands come to you. God, that's great.
Wow. Yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah, just to boil it down. But you've got this. It's such an amazing story, you know. Girl from Iowa, go to Liverpool. Now you're general manager, Brooklyn Bowl, and it's a great story.
I appreciate it. Thank you for saying that.
I'm psyched for you.
Thank you.
It's great. Thanks for being here, Anna.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Peace.
Hey, that was me talking to the wonderful Anna Ayers, general manager at Brooklyn Bowl Williamsburg. She's such an engaging personality, and to learn about her background in performing arts was super interesting. I mean, I kind of didn't even know that Paul McCartney ran and funded and is the benefactor for the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts. Makes sense that it's in Liverpool, obviously. And I'm really, really cool that Anna went there and was great to hear that level of background just from someone who was a natural performer. And I, like I said, I listened to her album. You can go check out her solo vocal work. And it's really quite amazing. And just shows you when you're in the right place at the right time. I mean, if you're in the performing arts in New York, you're working as a wait person somewhere in all likelihood. I mean, that's kind of the common story. And then having this chance meeting with Peter Shapiro, who obviously saw a sparkle of this amazing personality and engaging human and was like, come on down and work it at Brooklyn Bowl. I think it's awesome. And I love the Pete Shapiro vibe. Like I said, I had Peter on the show back in August of 2022. You should definitely, if you're interested in Brooklyn Bowls, and if you're just a live music fan, that's a must listen to episode. Please go back and check that out. But like I said, this March was International Women's Month, and I was so happy to be able to have Anna on the show and talk about her experience at Brooklyn Bowl and learn more about Brooklyn Bowl from a general manager's perspective, but also, you know, that they have all operational roles are filled with by women entirely. And while Anna kind of said it just sort of happened, I mean, we talked about how it's just important to hire the best people possible, but also I think it's great that they're all women in those roles there. That's just necessary for young women that are coming up and want to be in music and have the passion for managerial types of roles and want to be in behind the scenes in that respect. Just important that there are people that they can look to to be role models. And that Anna talked about how now she's in that role model position. And I think that's really great. One thing I wanted to note was just kind of the security is always interesting at venues in general, and how one of the former security people at Brooklyn Bowl now runs their own security company, and that's the security company that Brooklyn Bowl's outsourced to, and they understand the light-handed vibe, the hospitality vibe that Brooklyn Bowl strives to represent and to embody while they're there, and it's just a part of the overall vibe of Brooklyn Bowl. I can't speak enough about the strength of this aspect of what Brooklyn Bowl does, as well as the food, of course. I mean, the food's amazing. The live music is extraordinary. Focus on jam bands, I'm down with, because that's what I love. And it's just a really great place to see a show. And Anna is really doing an amazing job at Brooklyn Bowl in her new role as general manager. I was so happy to have her on the show. And it was just an amazing conversation. Really enjoyed it. And I hope to visit Brooklyn Bowl in Williamsburg as soon as possible. Next time I go to New York City, that's the stop that I'm making it when I'm there to go to a new venue. So really happy that you were all along for this special episode with Anna Ayres. And thanks so much for your continued support of Roadcase. And I'm so psyched to bring you, to continue to bring you amazing interviews as we move along here. So thanks for following along, Roadcase. You can follow us on Instagram, Roadcase Pod, on all the socials. And you can visit our website, roadcasepod.com. And please don't forget to follow Roadcase on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts or whatever streaming platform you listen to this podcast on. Thanks so much for your support. Glad that you were here for this one. And I want to send a special thank you to the wonderful Anna Ayres of Brooklyn Bowl Williamsburg for being here on this episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening. And I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod. And we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.